Hi, and welcome to Newfound Records. I'm Wayne Tucker, and this is part two of Follow That Dream, the Loretta Cormier Johnson story. Last week, we followed Loretta's life and career from the time she left the Valley of the Winds as a teenager in 1980. She left with established country singer Reg Watkins to follow her dream of becoming a star, like her idols, Loretta Lynn and Dolly Parton. Traveling in their second-hand motorhome and in small planes and boats, they relentlessly entertained, often in remote towns in western and northern Canada, as well as in Newfoundland, Labrador, and Quebec. They performed in lounges, community halls, even on top of their motorhome, wherever they could gather an audience. And they recorded a long-playing album. We pick up her story this week in 1982, as Loretta talks of following her dream through the recording studios of Nashville.
I believe it was at the Canadian Country Music Awards in Halifax that year where we met Frank Farah and Patty Parker, and they were the people that owned Comstock Records.
Yes.
Out of Kansas. And they were at the time the largest independent record label in the Midwestern United States. And they used to come to the Canadian Music Awards to scout out, you know, potential independent artists that were looking for record labels or whatever. So we had meetings with them, and they thought that, you know, they could do something for us. And so
away we went.
And again, it was a 3-hour session, cut and dry. Great musicians, but you just go in for 3 hours. We did 3 songs.
So tell me about the selection of the songs.
Oklahoma Memory is one, and that was a duet. And again, they were all songs that they brought to us. So Oklahoma Memory was one. That was a duet. It was a nice country duet, so it gave Reg and I the opportunity.
Was that the one that was promoted the most?
Yes, it was,
yes.
Yeah. I liked Here Come the Lines. It just had a nice beat, nice up-tempo beat. That got a fair bit of play, too. But they were all well-recorded, well-produced and everything.
Right. And tell me then about airplay and reaction and that sort of thing.
Well, we were, like, they were sending us reports every couple of weeks. The radio stations across the country, across the U.S. that was picking up Oklahoma Memory or Here Come the Lines. It got charted in places like the Armed Forces Network throughout Europe and places like South Adelaide, Australia, and so remote areas as well. But it never hit the key radio stations, you know, the big ones. It hit, yeah, a lot of the smaller radio stations throughout the U.S. and around the world, but not the big key radio stations that would get chart action and, you know, major attention.
Your dream at the time when you did the recording?
Oh, well, I guess, you know, I hope that it would become a hit and then whatever falls from that, bigger shows. And you always dream of getting out of the bars and doing bigger stage shows.
Sure.
I think that was always my dream, but never really got to experience that with my years with Reg. We pretty much stayed a lounge act, a bar circuit throughout the country. It helped us in getting gigs, and
right,
because we also got we also got nominated for the Canadian Country Music,
yes,
Association as well for duet of the year on that single. People paid attention a little bit more because it was something that we could add to our resume, and
sure,
you know, we could say, well, we, you know, recorded in Nashville and
yeah,
got this nomination as a result of it, and it's getting airplay, uh-huh, all over the world. So, you know, so
yeah,
it did help us in that aspect. I was going to say about, you know, musicians say that there's highs and lows. Okay, we did that, and that was done, but you still got to be out there making a living. So we just went back to work.
I come in from the field, and there's my lady. She's crying as she tends the supper stove. A still unopened letter tells the story. Stamped Oklahoma, an address to me with love.
It can only be from her.
there, and my mind slips back to Tulsa, to that college girl, so rich and so refined. But I love my country lady here in Kansas. I'll burn the letter and tell her not to cry. You and I don't need no Oklahoma memory, but Oklahoma storm, while in Kansas dream.
I promised when we left there I'd forgive you,
and I'd forget my Oklahoma memory. Yes, I forget my Oklahoma memory.
The name of the person on those Comstock recordings, the lady, is Laurie Christen.
Okay.
Tell me about that.
Well, the executives from Comstock Records, at the time, that seemed to be the thing that a lot of people were doing, changing their names, if their actual name didn't seem to fit the whole, you know, image of what you're doing or who you are or whatever. And I guess they thought Loretta Cormier wasn't country-sounding enough. And it was their idea to change my name. And who was I to say, well, no, you're wrong. They were the experts or so, yes. I thought, you know. So I agreed with it. It wasn't something that I really liked, but... I agree with it, but it was just for the national recordings, and that was it. I mean, that didn't stick very long.
I was going to ask you whether you used it for your performances.
No, and not even in our performances. It wasn't Reg and Laurie. It was always Reg and Loretta.
Well, that was kind of like you say, because there was Eddie Eastman.
Yeah,
was Eddie Razzle.
Yeah,
and he became Eastman.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
But it's not something that I'm happy about to this day. But it was done, and that, you know. But it never stuck.
Oh.
I know I'm not the one and only in your lifetime, but I may be the only one who's ever known you well. You're good at saying all the right things at the right time, and when I look into your eyes, I can always tell.
Here come the light.
I've heard so many times.
Come the line.
You're listening to a special edition of Newfound Records as we present part two of Follow That Dream, the Loretta Cormier Johnson story. When we return, Loretta talks about how her career took a near-fatal nosedive into the wilds of the Canadian North.
The Newfoundland pine marten is the small, elusive cousin to the otter. There are only about 300 of them left, and most live in the Little Grand Lake Forest of western Newfoundland. It's one of 14 wilderness hotspots that needs your help. By contributing $25, you can protect an acre of Canadian wilderness. It's a great gift for family and friends, and it'll help save the Little Grand Lake Forest and the pine marten who live there. Call World Wildlife Fund today at 1-800-26-PANDA.
For the best Irish and traditional music, you're listening to 93.5 CHMR FM.
Loretta Cormier toured extensively throughout Canada with country folk singer Reg Watkins for 6 years in the 1980s. Next, Loretta talks about the rewards and the rigors of touring.
Okay, Loretta, we've left Nashville, and we're up now. I think it was 1983 that you had that nomination for Best Country Duo. It was in 1985 that you released your next album, and I don't have a lot here of what was going on in 1983 and 1984. So what were you doing in 1983 and 84? You weren't recording.
We weren't recording, but I'm sure that we worked. We were, because it was nonstop. We didn't.
You didn't take 2 years off.
There wasn't no for sure. We kept, and what we do is go back and forth across the country. We had our circuit out in Alberta and in British Columbia and the Yukon, and we had our circuit in Newfoundland, and sometimes a little bit through Nova Scotia, but not much. It was mostly Newfoundland, mostly out in the western provinces. Mm-hmm. So we'd go for maybe 4 or 5 months out there, come back for 4 or 5 months, and we'd be back and forth. So we never stopped working.
And did you take time off?
Well, we could whenever we wanted to, really. You know, when we were in Newfoundland, we'd book us so that I could come home for a week or, you know,
Yes. Here
and there. So, yeah, we did take some. But I must say, we worked a lot of the weekends were full. And we always tried to be creative during the week, whether it was little community halls or talent shows for kids. Or I remember playing in the community hall in Forto, Labrador, one time, and the place was packed to the rafters. I mean, literally people were hanging off the rafters. It was amazing.
Yes.
And these are some of the great memories, though. These are some of the shows that, you know, I'll always remember.
What keeps you going when you're on that just sounds so tiresome to me. I mean, I know you love what you do, but it's one thing to love what you do and be expected to do it, as we said earlier, day after day. What keeps you going?
Well, you know, there are always, we made friends in different communities. We're always people that we look forward to seeing, you know. But I do remember days driving down the road in that big old motorhome. There was a gas guzzler, and I swear every garage from here to BC knew us and saw us coming because, and I remember curling down on the floor and just wanting to, not to get to the next destination, you know. I just didn't want to get there. I just wanted to, you know.
Yeah.
Pass right through.
And those were the bad days.
Those were the bad days, but there were a lot more up days, for sure.
On the road again, just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends, and I can't wait to get on the road again.
On the road again, going to places that I've never been.
Best of friends, insisting that the world keeps turning our way, and our way, on the road again, just can't wait to get on the road again, the life I love is making music with my friend, and I can't wait to get on the road again. Thank you.
best of friends, insisting that the world keeps turning our way, and our way on the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends, and I can't wait to get on the road again.
An upside down 172 Cessna. Yeah, I was in that.
I remember when I first saw that article in the paper and I looked at it, and the first thing I just saw, oh, that's a picture of a plane.
Yeah.
And when I looked at it more closely, I said, just a second here. Yeah. The wheels are on top.
On top, yeah. Yeah,
tell me about that.
That's
one.
How we landed. That's how we landed. And they had to take that plane out in pieces afterwards. Well, Reg and I were hired to do the Beluga Whale Festival up in Tuktoyaktuk. We decided, we were at the Watson Lake Hotel, or motel, and one of the owners there had a Cessna, and he was a bush pilot. So we hired him, rather than take the scheduled flight in, we hired him to bring us into to Tuktoyaktuk. We started out in the morning, and he looked a little worse for wear, but anyway, I think he was having a good time the night before, and he probably didn't get a lot of sleep. So anyway, we piled in, 172 Cessna. We had to take the two back seats and put the speakers in to make enough room. And so Reg and the pilot sat in the two front seats, and I sat on a speaker behind. Now, that's back in 1985. That's 25 years ago. Yes. And seatbelts probably weren't, as big an issue then as it is today. It was still a really stupid thing to do. But anyway, so we had borrowed we had also borrowed a video camera. Back then, video cameras were brand new too. We borrowed one from somebody we knew in Cassiar to take pictures at the festival once we got up to the festival. So I had that beside me, anyway, in the back. And so, you know, we started out, everything was great, we followed, being a bush pilot, he didn't use instruments, we followed the river. That there was a Pelly, and there were two rivers. And one was the Pelly, and one went north, and the other went into the Northwest Territories. So we started experiencing some snow and clouds and everything, and his visibility wasn't that great, so he knew there was a storm coming, so we thought we'd get to Dawson City and wait out the storm. We made it to Dawson, I think, and we refueled. And then we kept going. We ran, like I said, the storm just kept moving in. And he tried to go under the storm, but it was just too low in the mountains and everything, so it wasn't safe. He tried to go over the storm, but the plane kept icing up. So that wasn't a possibility. So we decided, well, we got to turn back. Maybe we can go back and stay in Farrell overnight and try the next day to get there. And so anyway, he turned back, but he started tracking the wrong river. And the river that took him out towards Northwest Territories rather than back to Farrell. So we basically got lost, running out of fuel, and knew we had to go down somewhere. We didn't know where we were. We knew we had to go down somewhere, and there was nothing. There was just mountains. And there were times when I looked out the window, and the top of the mountain seemed like it was just under the wheels of the plane. And then there were other times when you were up. And with the visibility not great, I mean, you never knew. Look what happened to that plane in Labrador. It hit a hillside. You never knew where you were really at the time. So we knew we had to get down fast. We had, we found out afterwards, we had maybe a few minutes of fuel left, and that was it. But so anyway, we saw this riverbank. There was a bit of open water, and there were some cabins along the river. So we said to the pilot, you know, this might be a good choice right here. At least we'll have shelter. If we get down okay, at least we'll have shelter. Again, I was only 19 or 20, and I didn't realize the danger I think I was in. I remember saying to Reg, because Reg had been videoing before we got into that trouble. Reg had been videotaping the scenery and everything. So I said, "Give me back the video camera so I can put it in the case so it don't get broken or anything." I was more concerned about that, I think, at the time. So anyway, we decided to try and land on the riverbank there. And of course, the middle of April, and he had just had wheels on the plane, not skis. So when we went down, the wheels hit the snow, and the snow was a little bit soft. So we flipped over three or four times, and we ended up bottom up like that. And we were pinned in the plane. Everything, the speakers and everything, of course, was flying around. A few bumps and bruises, but no broken bones or anything. A little bit of panic at the time. especially from the pilot. As I remember, most of the pilot was more panicked than we were. And just yelling for help, thinking, well, maybe, you know, there might be somebody in those cabins, never dreaming there was. And apparently, there were three families. It was like a commune, people that had moved away from society, living on their own, and they were part of a group of religious people that three or four families would live there for so many months and go back, and more families would come out and live there and experience nature, I guess. They had their own, like they dried their own meats, they grew their own vegetables, they did everything on their own. So, and these were very educated people. I think one family, the guy was an engineer from San Diego, and two teachers from Ottawa, and there was 13 altogether in those three families. They were little ones, kids, you know. So they saw the plane coming down really low, and they thought we were sightseers. And so they came out to see the plane, but when they realized we were in trouble, they got their snowshoes, and they got into the boat to cross the open part of the water, and they snowshoed over to the plane. At the time, there was smoke coming out of the front, so they didn't know. They waited a little while. They heard us, but they waited a little while because they thought maybe it might blow up or something. So, but as it turned out, it was just snow with around the firewall, so steam and stuff coming through, so it wasn't an issue. So they had to get us out. They had to pull us out. We were stuck in there. I don't know if we would have gotten out on our own or not. And they took us back to their cabins, and we spent the night there. There were three. Each family had their own private cabin, and then there was a big open area for their prayer meetings and their meals. They did all the cooking and everything as well. And I remember a little boy saying to his mother when we were walking up the path, she had just pointed out to us where the outhouse was, out down this little trail. And the little boy said to his mom, "My goodness, Mom, the wolves must have been really close last night because they were howling so loud." And I thought, I'm going to need to go to the washroom really, really bad before I venture out on my own through that trail tonight. But, I mean, these people were amazing. They fed us, and they had this shortwave radio that hadn't been working for weeks, and they hadn't been able to make contact with the outside world. They saw it as a sign because they said, like, I can't believe it. The first try, they were able to make contact with Whitehorse when we got there and let people know that. But now, in the meantime, the pilot had hit the button on his plane, to like a beacon, to let people know. And he was in contact with a commercial flight when we ran into trouble. And they said, well, if you get down safely — it wasn't when, it was if you get down safely, we'll send someone out to get you, to find you. Anyway, but we got out. We made contact. The next day, a little two-seater Piper came in, picked me up, and took me to Whitehorse, and picked up Reg and the pilot, somebody else, and took them to Farrell, and then to Whitehorse from there. And Reg and I got back on the scheduled flight and went to Tuktoyaktuk, and we were a day late, but we still did our show. So it was quite the experience. It was quite the experience.
You're listening to part two of Follow That Dream, the Loretta Cormier Johnson story on CHMR. In 1985, Loretta and Reg released their second long-playing album, This One's For You. At the time, music critic Jeff Meeker praised Loretta as the best female country singer in the province, and said that the album was a world-class product, a lavish production with first-rate recording and engineering. He went on to say that every country music fan should own it. Next, Loretta speaks of the album and its songs.
Can you remember the circumstances leading up to that? Do you remember any discussions like, let's do another album?
Not specifically. I think it was just time. You know, the other one had gotten a fair bit of airplay. We'd had pretty good success, so I think we just felt it was time to do a new one. You know, give our fans something else to listen to.
Mm, right.
Yeah.
And would you say it's a similar type of music to the first album? It's country,
I think so.
Folks,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really fine album. It's well produced, I think, and the musicianship is good.
Yeah, that was done.
The songs are good.
I think that was done in Orchard Studios in.
I don't know.
I'm not sure now. Yeah. I think it was in Ontario as well.
I think it was 85. Is there any particular song on there that you would rank as being your particular favorite or anything that...
I've always really liked The Basque Whalers of Red Bay. For me, that just got a story, and it's like, you know, the history of Red Bay.
That, do you sing on that one?
No, I don't. No, I love the song.
Yes.
you know, the couple that my cousin wrote too, Sunrise Traveling Boots and the Bayou Song. The Bayou Song is a real Cajun sounding tune. Yeah. I really enjoyed that one.
Right. That's a real dance song, that is.
Yeah, it is. It is, yeah, for sure.
Going to break, and when we return, Ridge and Loretta run their course.
Do you love the music of Newfoundland and Labrador? Join host Kevin Kelly every Saturday from 10 a.m. till noon on 93.5 CHMR FM for Upon This Rock, 2 hours of the best in local music.
I am leaving on the evening tide.
From alternative to traditional, this radio show highlights the rich, diverse talent found in our own backyard. Upon This Rock, Saturdays 10 a.m. till noon, and only on 93.5 CHMR FM. And also available on the World Wide Web via MP3 stream or Real Audio at www.mun.ca/CHMR.
If the quality of the air we breathe depends to a large extent on the number of trees that surround us, wouldn't air quality improve if we simply planted more trees? The tree you plant and care for today will provide shade, beauty, clean air, and filter harmful pollutants for generations. Help Tree Canada. Grow clean air. Support Tree Canada by visiting us at treecanada.ca. Trees do their part. Let's do ours.
You're tuned to 93.5 CHMR FM, Alliant 825, Cable 492, or available on the World Wide Web via MP3 stream at www.chmr.ca. Mun Radio, your only music alternative.
If you like good old country music, please join me Friday nights from 9 until midnight for the Good Old Country Show. Here and only on radio station 93.5 FM. And the request line is always open at 737 7932. 1935, or you can email me at countrygary@hotmail.com. This Friday night for the Good Old Country Show on radio station 93.5 FM.
You're listening to Newfound Records, coming to you from the campus of Memorial University in St. John's, Newfoundland. We now continue with part two of Follow That Dream, the Loretta Cormier Johnson story. In 1985, Newfoundland musicians came together to raise money in support of famine relief in Africa. Canadian entertainers had contributed the song Tears Are Not Enough, and the Americans gave We Are the World. One of the prime efforts in this province was a benefit concert in Marystown, and this was followed up with a companion album, They're Only Human, You See, with songs by Dave and Aubrey, George Rousel, Simon I, and other country artists of the day. Reg Watkins wrote two songs for that album, and here's one of them, as he and Loretta sing Wheels in Motion.
On our planet Earth, we travel through time, where peace among nations is man's hardest climb. I'm one of Earth's children, not a pope or a king. Today I am searching for good news to bring.
On all nations' flags, put a sign of the dove. Fill the world with good news and loads of love. Let the message of Christmas last all year through. Help the world's leaders find the way to.
Lord, people are starving and their backs to the wall. The least we can do is answer their call. We are free children and we can still sing. Now the wheels are in motion with more help to bring.
On our planet Earth, full of rain, wind and sun, man has looked to the heavens since life here begun. Supreme though you are, Lord, at times we can't see. I believe in that power much greater than me.
All children are beautiful in their own way. Love's universal medicine they need today. This song has no borders, it's straight from the heart. And Lord, keep us singing, help us do our part.
Lord, people are starving and their backs to the wall. The least we can do is answer their call. We are free children and we can still sing. Our wheels are in motion with more help to bring. Lord, people are starving and their backs to the wall. The least we can do is answer their call. We are free children and we can still sing. Now the wheels are in motion with more help to bring. The wheels are in motion with more help to bring.
Now, you mentioned earlier down in Cadwar Valley somewhere, at the Strawberry Jamborees or festivals, whatever it is they call them.
That was a brainchild of Reg and I. Actually, before, there weren't a lot of festivals on the go. When Reg and I would, sometimes we'd stop, for example, we'd go to Twillingate and go to the park there and set up, there were times we'd, on top of the motorhome, we set up our equipment, we put off a little show on a Sunday afternoon, get the word out with the mummer, and people would come to the park and just enjoy the day, and we'd play music. We'd have it set up on top of our motorhome. We've done that. We've done it at Pinchcut Lake outside Cornerbrook. We've done it at Southbrook. We started a festival at Southbrook Park in Cornerbrook as well. So there were, back then, we were doing a lot of outdoor things in the summertime. Before every community started to have their own festival, we were doing that type of thing. So we started one in the valley on my family's farm called the Strawberry Jamboree. And the early days, we did about, I'd say there must have been 12 or 13 years of that. We had upwards of 10,000 people there some weekends. And I remember the road coming down to the farm was probably about a half a mile long. And I remember just the line up right up to the road, people, cars coming down.
This went on for 10 or 12 years?
Yeah.
Were you involved all that time?
Yeah, yeah, oh. Every year, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a big undertaking, and yeah, obviously you're enjoying that.
It was, but it was a great chance in the summertime, you know, getting everybody together, and it was certainly a family affair because, and I remember Mallory saying to him, because the old farmhouse, when she was little, and she'd be sleeping upstairs, or she'd be up in the bedroom upstairs, and she'd have the window open, she'd be listening to us singing on stage or whatever, when she was probably like 3 and 4 years old.
Yes.
And she still remembers that to this day, the festival and all the music and everything.
And in 86 then, things were starting to wind down for you and Reg, I think.
Yeah, well, he had the car accident. And that, you know, for him physically, that made things a lot harder. And I remember, actually, it was just before the Strawberry Jamboree that summer. He had the accident. He was in the hospital. So I still had to do the show by myself. And this is when I really realized that I had to carry a show. I never had to carry anything by myself before. It was all, like, I always counted on Reg to be the main vocalist or when it comes to chatting to the audiences and everything. And
yes.
So I got Gordon to actually back me up musically. And I pulled out the show and I started talking on the mic and I haven't stopped since.
Right.
So it brought me out of the shell that I probably was still in to a certain degree at that time. It made me a little more comfortable.
So it had that positive...
In all that negativity and, you know, with the tragedy of what happened to him... There was a positive aspect.
Put an end to Reg's performing in terms of things like step dancing.
He never danced after that. No, he couldn't. No. So I think it was getting around that time, 1986, when we realized that, you know, it's probably time now to move on. And
course.
I think we'd run our course at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And Gordon and I, my brother Gordon and I, had always talked about at some point doing a show, performing together. Actually, we were, Reg and I, in 86, I guess, late 86, we're up in early 87, we were in Fort McMurray doing some of our last shows. I think we had something booked back in Newfoundland for the summer, but we were really thinking seriously at that point about Reg maybe backing off, and because, again, his injuries too, backing off and doing a management role, and Gordon and I performing.
Right.
So that's where we were sort of at, but we were in Fort McMurray, and... the little town of Pine Point in the Northwest Territories. We'd met so many people from there, from Newfoundland, that were living there. Always said, you guys got to come, you know, up and do a show for us. And we found out that the town was actually closing down. The mine was pulling out of there, and the town was closing down. So everybody that lived there was being moved somewhere else. So I said, Reg, this is our last chance now to go to Pine Point and do a show. So really pushed it, I think, you know, so he called the hotel and we got a gig in the hotel there for a weekend. And we go there, and that's where I met my husband. And then from there, we went back to, actually our last gig then was in Fort, we had to go back to Fort McMurray for the following weekend. That was probably our last gig. He dropped me off in Dryden, Ontario, where Gordon was living. And Gordon and I started doing shows in Ontario, and he went on to Newfoundland. Gordon and I went to the Country Music Awards in Vancouver that year, and then moved to, Gordon had no ties at the time, so we moved to Yellowknife, where my future husband was living at the time. We had lots of great gigs in Yellowknife and surrounding areas over the 5 years that we worked up there together, Gordon and I. You know, we did a lot of CBC work. We'd go out and we'd open sports complexes in different communities. We went like places like Baker Lake and Rankin Inlet and Cambridge Bay and Copper Mine and Fort McPherson and Inuvik. We did all the northern hamlets. We played over in Iqaluit and, you know, Kujawaq on the northern tip of Quebec. I don't know what it's called today. I think it's changed now, but that's what it was back then. So we did all the northern communities during our time in Yellowknife, as well as playing at the Legion regularly in Yellowknife itself as well.
And what kind of an act did you have there now? Like, what did you do and what did he do?
Okay, that was more, again, country, but, you know, country, but dance music, a lot of dance. We played a lot of dances.
Right.
During that time. And some Newfoundland stuff too, because Gordon was a great accordion player, and we'd throw a mixture in, and there are a lot of Newfoundlanders up in those areas, so they appreciated that. Gordon played a lot of different instruments, lead guitar, mandolin, accordion, and bagpipes, and I just, again, played guitar and sang. And he also played the foot bass, so we always had a bass sound, and electronic drummer at the time. So we needed that to do, like I said, dance music or whatever. You needed to have the drum and the... But again... my dream was still to have a full band, and I wasn't getting it yet.
No. And it was in 1988, I have it, that the album Head and Home was released. So what name were you performing by and recording by as a duo?
Cormier Country.
Now, I noticed that you have three co-writing credits on that, along with Gordon. One is for Heading Home.
Oh, yes.
Heading Home, the song.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Well, again, heading home to the Cadre Valley. I swear the attraction to home is as strong or stronger today than it was 25 years ago. You know, it's I don't know what it is about Newfoundland, for me, the Cadre Valley, you know, specifically.
I'm gonna be in the Cadre Valley in the summertime, is where I wanna be. I wanna breathe the mountain air with my friends who like to share all the beauty of this place that's home to me.
That old familiar ache I get to feeling now and then hits me when I'm making plans of going home again.
I'm packing up my suitcase, my guitar's in my hand, so goodbye, oh, while we're heading home.
Gonna be in the Cadre Valley in the summertime, is where I wanna be. I wanna breathe the mountain air with my friends who like to share all the beauty of this place that's home to me.
So goodbye, oh, while we're heading home.
I'm gonna be in the Cadre Valley in the summertime, is where I wanna be. I wanna breathe the mountain air with my friends who like to share all the beauty of this place that's home to me.
The house that stands below the hill I just can't wait to see.
Tonight there'll be a party, a midnight jamboree. So goodbye, oh, while we're heading home.
I'm gonna be in the Cadre Valley in the summertime, is where I wanna be. I wanna breathe the mountain air with my friends who like to share all the beauty of this place that's home to me. I wanna breathe the mountain air with my friends who like to share all the beauty of this place that's home to me.
Loretta and her brother Gordon performed as Cormier Country for 5 years, based out of Yellowknife. By 1992, Loretta Johnson, now a mother, hung up her guitar for 10 years as she devoted herself to her family. They moved to Conception Bay South, where even her close friends were unaware of her musical past. Today, the spirit of Loretta's ancestry lives on in daughter Mallory, who began kicking to the beat of her mother's music while still in the womb. She became recognized as a talented singer, dancer, musician, and actress. Next, Loretta talks of resuming her career and the birth of the Cormiers.
By the age of 10 or 11 actually, well, my brother was still living in B.C. with his family, but he came over every summer and we'd do shows together. So when she was 11, 28 Fish Fun Folk Festival wanted Gordon and I to go out and do a show, so we decided to make it a threesome and we brought Mallory with us.
Yes.
And that was the beginning there for us. We realized, like, the reception was wonderful there. And we realized that we had to do something. We had to find...
What was Mallory doing? I know she was singing.
She didn't play then, but she danced. She sang and she danced. She tap danced as well. And the reception was so wonderful that we decided we had to do something, record something. So, and the first one was Moving Away, and that was mostly Gordon's. Gordon was the major writer in that song. Mallory did some as well.
First album?
That's the first, yeah. And that was a song really that really you know, we got a nomination that year, Music NL as well, for that. But that was the first recording that Mallory did. And that song today, after like all these years, I still get emails from people every year across the island wanting permission for their child to sing this in the Kiwanis Festival. I get it all the time. I get feedback from how they did and how much they appreciate it. It's just wonderful. It's a song I think that's going to be around forever because kids are singing it all the time.
Yes.
You know, it's a song that, you know, it's a song about a little girl whose best friend is moving away to Fort McMurray to find work.
Yes.
It just hits everybody. It's a song that you can, a lot of people have lived it. So that.
I am a schoolgirl, 11 years old, and I watch as my friends have to pack up and go. Their parents are leaving. I don't understand why they have to leave Newfoundland. I don't watch the news, but I heard Daddy say the economy. They can't fix it today. I'll give my allowance $1 a day to keep them from moving away. I live by the ocean and play in the sand. I'm thankful for living here in Newfoundland.
So that was her first recording. And from there, we recorded the CD, started doing shows, and it just kind of went from there.
So it was the first of them, first three of you.
First was the three of us, and then...
Tell me about the repertoire of that CD relative to what you were doing with Gordon and what you were doing with Reg earlier. Like you.
Well, that one, we shifted more to Celtic. I tried to put a little of our Scottish influences into the CD as well. There's lots of Irish bands around, but our influence was Scottish music. And some of the songs, for example, the Shamrock Thistle and Rose is a song that my grandfather used to sing when he was a young man. That's where we learned it from, our grandfather, Alan MacArthur.
So that seems like it was well received. You mentioned the Music NL yeah. nomination, or did you actually get an award?
Yeah, we know we were nominated that year, yes. first year, but you know, we were brand new, really, mm-hmm. as a group, we were brand new, so that was wonderful just to get a nomination that year.
You're listening to part two of Follow That Dream, the Loretta Cormier Johnson story on CHMR. Now, Gordon's son Randall joined the Cormiers, and then they went on to record three more CDs of Celtic music through the 2000s. They toured in Canada and the U.S., and they received several awards from Music NL and became established as one of the top folk roots groups in the province. And at the 2007 awards ceremony, Loretta dedicated an award to our friend and former colleague, Reg Watkins, who was seriously ill at the time and passed away a short time later. To close the latest chapter of the Loretta Cormier story, she looks back at her experiences and offers advice to the next generation.
And looking back on your career, have you ever thought about, I mean, I guess you learned a lot. You grew up fast, I would think.
I grew up very fast.
As a young lady, because you started so young, and I'm sure you really didn't know what you're getting yourself into.
No.
If you had to do it all over again, what would you do differently?
Gosh, you know, I mean, you have to pay your dues. I think you do, and I feel like I've done that. And I always said that if I could pay my dues, maybe I can make it easier for Mallory, you know, and try and skip over some of the harder spots, the rough areas that I've had to put up with. But I don't know that I would do anything different. I mean, my years with Ridge, there were highs and lows, but I'll tell you, it's memories that, for me, that I'll take with me, you know, my lifetime.
Have you ever regretted that you did that left university
what
you did?
No, my only regret is that I never got that piece of paper that said you got a degree.
Yes.
So that's my biggest regret.
Yes.
But I've had a lot of life experiences.
So we know that your daughter is interested in pursuing a musical career. What's your attitude been? Have you been encouraging it or discouraging it or just standing back and letting events? Does Mom have any advice for her?
You know, I tell her you got to follow your dreams, you know. She said, as soon as she's finished university, she says she's moving to Nashville now, whether that will happen or not. But I said to her, you know what? You have to follow your own dreams. If that's your dream, then you have to try. You have to try. You're not going to know. You don't want to live with regrets and say, well, I should have done this, I should have done that. So I'm hoping that she follows her dreams, take it wherever she can.
You've been listening to Follow That Dream, the Loretta Cormier Johnson story, a special presentation of the Newfound Records radio show on CHMR 93.5 FM. The songs were sung by Loretta Cormier, by Reg Watkins, and by Mallory Johnson. For more information on those songs, visit the Newfound Records website, newfoundrecords.ca. Newfound Records was researched, produced, edited, and hosted by me, Wayne Tucker. Send me an email, wayne@newfoundrecords.ca. And a special heartfelt thanks to Loretta Cormier Johnson for generously sharing her memories and her music, and for the interview, which was done in June of 2010. You can find out more about Loretta and the Cormiers on the internet at thecormiers.ca. Until next time, as always, be kind to Mother Earth and her children. See you next week. Bye-bye.